Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences on related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and the nature of consciousness. For more information about our organization Toward the Light and this radio broadcast, please visit our websites towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. A couple of brief announcements. First of all, I'd like to bring your attention to the fairly new Toward the Light directory. This is a directory for anyone who's an experiencer, researcher, enlightened media, caregiver, loved one, friend, what have you. Interested in these topics, you're more than welcome to sign up and be listed in the Toward the Light directory. This will be a good platform where people can easily make contact with one another about these topics and also find resources and information relevant to their needs. Again, you can find this at towardthelight.org. and look for the TTL directory. Hope you will subscribe and sign up today, as they say. Also, another thing that I would like to bring your attention to is that we do have a new blog that is centered on this radio broadcast, towardthelightorg.blogspot.com. So you want to check that out. This week, I'm very pleased to have someone who is a fellow near-death experiencer and who's also done extensive research and work centered in the UFO phenomena. And he's also the author of a number of books and also a DVD, and also happens to be a host of a program on BBS Radio, James Gilliland. Welcome, James, to Toward the Light.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show.
It's very nice to have you, and I've been looking forward to this. It looks like we've got a lot in common and a lot of things to discuss here. And I would really like to make an acknowledgement here that I think is quite important. Of course, it's common knowledge to a number of people that there's been issues recently with the coast-to-coast broadcast, and they opted not to have you on the show because you were actually standing up and honoring your truth. For wanting to be more positive with aspects to the UFO, that there was some kind of interesting, I guess, sort of controversy, for lack of a better word, that came up recently, and you stood by your truth, and I really want to commend you for doing that, and so people like you are more than welcome on Toward the Light. So if you've got any comments that you'd like to say about that, feel free to do so.
All right. Yeah, that was... what it was an interview with Ed Grimsley, and he seems to project his consciousness into the events of what he's experiencing. And I always tell people, if you're like a military man and you're watching a UFO and you see a light, you know, go between ships or whatever, you would say, oh, they're engaging in combat. You know, somebody that was involved, like a UPS guy, would say, oh, they're you know, sending cargo back and forth, or or beaming cargo up and down from the ground. And then you know, the same thing, you know, it could be even you know, a teleporter or something like that. You know, we don't know what's really going on, and until we do, we can't really project our reality on, you know, on an event that's happening. And what I saw was we had the same night vision. He's talking about this third-generation night vision.
Yes.
And we had the exact same equipment. Actually, I bought one from him. They're pretty spendy units, but you can really see about 10 times more of the sky than you can see with your regular vision. And we watched these ships traveling, and it was quite amazing because they were moving from, it's like they would come together, be flying side by side, and he was talking about this war going on where they're blasting each other, and then ships were coming out and sending out escape pods, and then the F-15s were coming in, our guys, and blasting the escape pods, and all these, you know, debris coming down and everything else. And the problem is that we were watching the same event, and I didn't see that. I did see the ships. You know, the night vision is awesome. I'd grant that. But, you know, we just didn't see the battling. And the people that he brought on the air also said the same thing. Yes, we did see the ships, but we didn't see the exchange of fire or explosions or any of this. So, you know, I'm not saying he didn't see that, but here at the ranch, we've been using the same equipment for quite a while now. And in our area here, we just don't see it. We don't see any kind of a you know, battle going on and ships exploding and debris coming down or, you know, they just cruise along side by side and they pass each other. And so far, we haven't seen any, you know, exchange from the ship-to-ship exchange, but we have seen at one time we did see something from the ground, because they have a, and we found out, we tracked that down, it was our people actually shooting at them.
Oh, my.
So it was a military operation, a secret one, and we tracked it down through certain connections, and they said, look, I can't give you details, but there was a operation that went on up there, it's top secret, and you just have to trust what you saw, you know, so.
No, I think it's very interesting that a lot of people, certainly I'm not going to claim all people, but it seems that a lot of people tend to want to default towards something negative or hostile. And so
yeah.
They're going to say, oh, well, they're at war, and because you're choosing to remain at worst neutral about that, and not just by default agree with them. You know, you've done a really good job at taking a stand here, and I really, really commend you for that, James. And another thing that's very interesting about all this, it seems that over the years, there have been two topics which have been considered rather taboo, death and UFOs,
mm-hmm.
and extraterrestrials. The interesting thing is that you and I are both NDEers, so we've both cracked that shell open, and then we've also both been heavily involved in interdimensional activity, and so, you know, we're naturally going to see these things and to acknowledge that they take place. So, you know, talk about breaking some bubbles open here. I think it's very important. So what I'd like to do, actually, James, is start by asking you to share a bit about your near-death experience, and then we'll move on to some interesting dialogue from there. Tell us about your NDE, when it happened, and what was the cause, and then what ensued from there.
Well, I think it was around 27 years ago or so. I'm not exactly sure when, but it was a drowning. And you know how it is after an NDE, you just don't do time anymore.
Oh boy, tell me about that one.
It's not relevant anymore. You know?
Indeed.
Everybody wants to go, okay, when did this happen? At what time? And I mean, I can go back and research it and find out. And actually, people did, and they found it in the newspapers and everything. But you know, it's not important to me to do that, to nail down every dot, and you know.
Well, I'm actually the same way. In fact, a number of people have tried to encourage me to write an autobiography, and I said, blimey, I can't do that because I've never, ever lived in chronological time or even been aware of it. And so NDEs just validate all that. But anyway, just, yeah, the gist of your experience is lovely and certainly fine with me.
Yeah, but the basically it was a body surfing accident, and it was a drowning. And at the time, I was a avid swimmer. I was captain of the water polo team and swim team and all the other stuff. And I felt like I was bulletproof out in the water. And these sneaker waves came in out of nowhere and just slammed us. And we were out on a sandbar, and it was probably 6 to 8 foot waves. And from there, they just jumped up to 17 to 25 foot waves out of nowhere.
Where were you, lad, if I may ask?
I was in a place called Little Corona, which is right next to what they call the Wedge down in Southern California. It was on a beach down in that area.
Okay. Reminds me of being in Hawaii, because when I was there, I also dealt with these waves. It's like you're talking about, they sneak up on you, and you don't even know they're coming, and whoops, there you go.
yeah.
Fortunately, I didn't experience drowning. So close, but
yeah.
Not really. Something brought me up at the very last moment. But go ahead, please.
But, well, so basically the first wave that hit me, I tried to get under it, and I was swimming on this, we're out on a sandbar, and it was about probably chest deep out there, and I was swimming as fast as I could, and the next thing you know, all the water was gone, basically, and I was running, you know, to try to dive underneath this wave, and I didn't make it, and it hit right on top of me.
Ooh.
And I felt like a fly getting swatted, and it collapsed my diaphragm, and it dislocated my shoulder. It was quite a mess. And then I tried to, you know, get out of it, and it just kept holding me under forever. And then when I finally got out of it and came up again, I couldn't breathe because I was hit so hard. My diaphragm was collapsed. And then the second wave hit me and held me under forever. And just when I came up and could get air, the third wave hit me, and then it was just all over. When it held me under, there's no way you can hang on, you know, anymore. And so as soon as I took that breath of water or whatever, I just relaxed. You automatically, you know, breathe. You have to breathe. You know, you can only, for so long, you can hold it. And I ended up going through what they call the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And the producers of Contact Has Begun actually did an incredible special effects of the near-death experience. And it was just amazing.
Now, what was this called, Len?
I'm sorry, what was that?
There was some documentary.
Yeah, Contact Has Begun, the movie that we have out. We'll be sending you a copy here shortly. I know the producer shot one to you already.
Oh, great. Looking forward to that. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And it shows the near-death experience and where I ended up. But my near-death experience was a lot different than some people's because I didn't stop to talk along the way. And there seems to be a lot of different levels you can end up on when you cross over.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I ended up in this golden plane of bliss. It was just this pure golden white light and of consciousness and energy, and I was unique yet one with that light.
Yes.
And I was a light being, and I had a conversation with the, I just call it the source, you know.
I do too.
Yeah, because it doesn't really, it's not male or female, doesn't really have a name.
Yeah.
But it can appear any way you need to experience it.
Exactly, and that's a very valid point you just made right now, and we've talked about that a lot. In fact, David Icke and I have talked about that very thing, that what a soul needs to see, it will.
Yes.
You know, and that what for one's consciousness and one's experience will have a great impact on where one goes and what one experiences when one crosses over. So this is a great point, and I really appreciate it when other people bring this up and mention it too. So go ahead. This is great. This is sounding very, very familiar, mind you.
Yeah. And I tell people that, you know, the mind in which you seek is the mind in which you connect. And the same thing when you cross over is your consciousness will magnetize you to that place that best fits your reality or your belief system, you might say.
Yes.
And
yes.
That determines basically where you go. And you know, I missed all these other levels where, you know, you see your dead relatives or you see all these gurus and masters and everything.
I went through the same thing exactly. I didn't experience any of that.
Yeah, and I just ended up in this just the most unconditionally loving, joyous, blissful energy. You know, there's no words that can describe it. And I started having a conversation like thought to thought. It was almost telepathic, you might say. And you know, the first thing I asked was, how can I stay? And I got this transmission back to me, and it said, I didn't tell one of my children when to come or go. That's free will. And at the time, I was actually raised in the Catholic school because I had a lot of indoctrination there about, you know, the wrathful God and all that nonsense. And so, you know, I thought I had to appease this God or whatever. So the next thing I asked was, how can I earn the right to stay? And it came back to me and it said, you cannot earn what is given freely and unconditionally. And so I'm going, well, wait a minute, you know, this isn't the God I was taught about. You know, there's a little old man with a beard up here with lightning bolts in one hand and a computer in the other taking, you know, keeping track of everybody according to the image that I was given.
Oh.
And so basically, you know, it just said, you know, I kept talking to it, and I was just in total bliss, and I said, how can I give back. You know, I want to serve. And I didn't hear anything for a while. I was just floating in this total bliss. And then finally it came back to me and says, what do you want to do? What brings you joy? And I thought about it, and I said, you know, I would really like to go back and teach people about the true nature of God, that, you know, we have all these images and projections of men and doctrines, and none of them are really talking about this incredible, non-judging, blissful experience. So, you know, the last words I heard were, as you wish, and I was back in the body, and people were pulling me in on the beach, and that's why I named my radio show As You Wish.
Okay.
That's where that came from.
Oh.
Yeah, everybody goes, did you watch Princess Bride, you know, because he kept saying As You Wish, and I thought that was quite interesting because that was his, in that movie Princess Bride, that he always would say As You Wish, you know, it's like, it was kind of funny.
Oh, that's right, too.
Yeah.
A friend did the music for that film. Beautiful, beautiful music. And
oh, yeah.
You know, some really great messages. I mean, the one message that I gleaned from The Princess Bride was the power of love to restore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's nothing, there's no power greater than
yeah.
the power of love.
I always liked it, too. One of the things it showed as well was the balance, is that he was you know, perfectly balanced in everything, you might say. You know, he was a master at wit, he was a master swordsman, he was, you know, he had mastered all these different levels of experience. And I kind of like that, because each person was a master of just one experience, and that usually became their undoing.
Yes, that's a good point, too.
You know, but going back to the story, they pulled me in, you know, I remember they pulled me up on the beach because they were pulling all kinds of people out of the water. And they asked me, do you need an ambulance? And I said, no. And I don't know why I said that. I said, no, and I probably should have. But I crawled up on the beach. I was on my hands and knees, and they kind of pulled me up and just left me there. And the next thing I know, I woke up, and I was just in a pool of water. I guess all the water came out of me. And I couldn't see or anything, even though I was back in my body and they pulled me up on the beach, it was like a dream or something. I still couldn't see. I could hear people talking to me, and I didn't realize what kind of condition I was in, and I passed out basically. And then I woke up hearing them calling my name, and a really good friend of mine by the name of Chris Moore was with me, and he was thrown over the jetty and hurt really bad by the barnacles and rocks, and I guess they life-flighted him out with a helicopter, and they were trying to find me to go to the hospital to talk to him to keep him from going into shock, and that was why the lifeguard was driving up and down calling my name. And so when I got up, and I kind of waved at the lifeguard, and you know, I guess he expected me to come running up to him, and I was just really weak. You know, I still was kind of nauseated and dizzy. And so I listened to the whole lecture on the buddy system, you know. And I said, I just told him, I said, you have no idea what I've been through. I said, I was out there, too. And I said, I just came to from passing out and drowning out there. You know, and then finally he chilled out, and he said, you need to go to this, drive to this hospital, you know. And so I did, and it was weird. I had to keep pulling over because I was having these, like, hot flashes, and then I couldn't see very well, and then...
Oh, goodness me, and you were driving there, Les.
Yeah, and I...
Oh, buddy.
And I still drove to the hospital and talked to him and kept talking to him as they were working on him to keep him from going into shock and so they, you know, we got him through that, and then his parents came and I actually drove home drove his car, because we were in his car, and I drove his car home.
How old were you, lads, roughly?
There, yeah. I believe I was about 25 when that happened.
Okay.
And, you know, it was, and then, you know, I just wasn't the same after that. I couldn't relate to the world I was in anymore at all.
Oh, who can blame me that? Now, I want to ask you a question, because this is interesting, comparing notes. When you were out of body during a near-death state, were you aware of a body? And there's a reason I'm asking this question. You know, what sort of form did you take on whilst you were on the other side, or were you aware of any kind of form?
You know, I wasn't really, I didn't, like, look down and see hands or anything.
Okay, yeah.
And all I was more of consciousness, but I seemed to have eyes, or somehow, or some form. And I was seeing, you know, I was fully present there as if my body was there. And I could see very clearly everything going on. And I really, you know, for all I know, I could have been an orb or a light sphere or...
That's, okay, that's what I wanted to drive at, because I experienced the same thing. It's just, you know, this feeling of being really huge, because you're merging with that love, and you no longer have this little sense of little me or an ego thing.
Mm-hmm.
You still are you, but you merge with this love. And what happened with me is that I experienced myself, and I used the analogy of a bubble, and then I was thinking orb, a luminous bubble is the word that I've used. And I wondered if you, in fact, may have experienced the same thing, because I did not have hands or arms or legs or feet, or, you know, like a humanoid type constitution whilst on the other side. I felt myself and experienced myself more like an orb or bubble.
Uh-huh.
And then I see the, you know, the work that you've done with orbs, and I've actually got photographs, I should probably put them on my website, of orbs in some of the places that I've been, and it makes me think that this might indeed be, shall I say, one of our natural states. In other words, what we do look like on the other side.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what, you know, my research and Michal's as well, Michal led with, we've done a lot of research into this, and what I've been experiencing is that I believe on some of the lower levels, you still take on a body.
Yes, yes.
Because especially the lower astral levels, you'll still take on a body.
Exactly.
But when you get into the higher levels, I do believe you can be more of a light sphere. And, you know, that's why I will see ghosts a lot of times will be, you know, they can come as an orb, or they can take on the appearance that they last knew if they're stuck in between worlds. But I think it is more of our natural state to go, you know, travel as an orb, you know, if we're spiritually focused, you might say. And when we cross over, I think the tunnel, from what I understand from master teachers, the tunnel that we're going through is that your soul is actually leaving the body, and it's going up the spinal canal, and it's traveling up and going out the crown, the top of the head, and into that next world, that total plane of bliss, or wherever you end up on. And I think basically without a body, we are light spheres.
I think so, too. Now, the interesting thing about that, and PMH Atwater and I have discussed this quite a lot, and she brings it up in her talks and when she's been on this show, there are a lot of us in the ears who do not experience the tunnel, although your analogy of the tunnel makes a lot of sense. But she actually maintains that the majority of NDEers do not experience the tunnel, and I certainly didn't,
mm-hmm.
to any of my NDEs. But I know that especially with Dr. Raymond Moody's work, he's coined the term near-death experience, and then these sort of prototypes have come into play, a la the tunnel, and seeing different people or religious figures, because that's, like you were pointing out, what people expect to see, or what a lot of people expect to see, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I never saw any of that. And then, you know, we'll just have a lot of these different experiences, but I feel that it's important to really expand upon some of this, just because not all of these archetypes, as it were, are going to be accurate for every NDEer. In other words, our experiences are going to be quite varied. So that's why I wanted to ask you about your experience. And it looked like, too, that you actually had the desire to come back to this plane, whereas I didn't. I was told that I needed to come back and basically do the same thing that you're doing, you know, share the message that death is an illusion. And now our work is about how we can really get people to understand the fact that, death is an illusion and that consciousness does survive death of the body. Gosh, I think it might even have been... I was looking at a few YouTube videos the other night, and maybe it was actually one from your site where it was someone was talking about... maybe it was from somewhere else. The hand is what gives the glove animation, but when the hand pulls out of the glove, then the glove is no longer animate. And that, I think that's a very good analogy about what happens to us when we leave our bodies. We are not our bodies. We just animate the body, but when we're done with that body or glove or shell or what have you, then we just lay it down and move on. So when you're getting back to your NDE, were you able to talk about it to other people after it happened? I know that obviously it completely transformed you, it changed you. What happened after that? Were you, did you feel compelled to share it with others, or were you compelled to be more quiet about it at first?
No, I wanted to, understand the experience, and it just turned my whole life upside down, because I was in commercial real estate, and I had, you know, the fancy house and the fancy cars and the boats and all the everything you need to be a success. And I was on the board of director for the Chamber of Commerce, believe it or not, which seems like a whole other world. But when I came back, and it was in Orange County, which is a very materialistic place.
Oh, dear, yes.
Yeah, like,
California, right?
Yeah, and, there was nobody I could talk to. I tried to talk to several different ministries, and all they saw was the devil or an angel, one or the other, and black and white, and they didn't understand any of the other things I was going through. And I really had a lot of trouble, and finally I just left, and I went up to the desert at first and stayed up there for a while, and then eventually I went to Santa Cruz, California, where there's a lot of that. It's like a smorgasbord of spirituality. And there I started studying with the teachings of the Inner Christ and the Tibetan Foundation and with yogis and lamas and a lot of different people. And there I started getting insights to, you know, the reality that, you know, there's many mansions out there. There's many planes and dimensions. And I kept studying these. And you know, basically what I found out about is that if you take the light spectrum and understand the light spectrum, you'll more understand the dimensions. And we have different names for these dimensions. And a lot of us, you know, we have a physical body, a mental or emotional body, and then we have an astral body that you know, has all of our memories in it, all of our past lives, everything. And then we have an etheric body, which is the blue body or the perfect incarnation. And it goes on beyond that. We have a Christ body, and I am a cosmic, you name it. You know, it just keeps going on and on to these higher dimensional bodies. And I started understanding more like the infrared level is where a lot of discarnate beings are hanging around. And they have a lot of unfinished business. And it seems in those levels, you have, on the lowest level, you have a lot of kind of really confused souls.
Yes.
And they look as gross as their consciousness is, you might say. So that's where you have a lot of this crazy stuff going on and a lot of things people call demonic and you name it and poltergeist.
There you go. Yes.
You know, ghosts and whatever. So, and in the higher levels there, you'll have masters or teachers that they're very advanced, very high masters and teachers, but they're still stuck, you might say, in religion. They haven't transcended all religious or cultural boundaries yet into that unconditional love for all people and all beings. And so they're still stuck in some kind of a program or a teaching, but they're great, great guys to hang out with.
And I really want to thank you for making that point, because that's a really important one and a valid one, because as we've been pointing out, just because one causes ill, it doesn't mean that one is suddenly omniscient and totally aware that they still can be stuck in their belief system, for sure.
Exactly. We have a saying here, just because you're dead doesn't mean you're enlightened, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know,
exactly.
if your car breaks down, you know, Bob at Bob's Garage, you crossed over, he could probably help you out and give you some guidance there. But if you want to ask him about other issues, other spiritual issues, you know, maybe he might not have those answers.
Right. Yeah. This is great. Now, did you experience this whilst you were on the other side, too? Were you able to see some of these different beings or different dimensions?
You know, what happened with me is the first experience just opened me wide open, and
sure.
It just anchored me in my own personal God connection.
There you go.
And then after that, I started traveling and going out of body, and I have pictures of me actually going out of body on my website.
I saw that. Was that during that, or were these other OBEs?
That was during a Tibetan technique where you spin your bands of energy and you actually leave the body. If you look close at it, one body my eyes are closed and the next body up my eyes are open. You know, and you can see the bands of energy spinning, and one body is actually bigger than the other body
as it's
traveling out. But after that experience, I started going to all these different levels, and I was doing a lot of work on some of these lower levels and trying to bring peace and clean up the energy there. And, you know, I had the first person that started appearing to me was Jesus, because I figured everybody else were spooks. You know, I didn't know who they were, and I didn't want to deal with them. And so I learned the real teachings of Jesus, what his real message was, which is really altered, unfortunately, the one that people get now. But it was quite simple of what he taught, and it was his life was his teaching. And basically, when he started out, he said, you know, I am the Son of Man, because as a child, you know, your parents are your God, and you focus on that, and you're their son, and that's your identity. And then later on, he started receiving messages, you know, spiritual messages, and so he started delivering those messages, and then he said, I'm a messenger, you know, of God. And then the third part of his sojourn down here, he said that, you know, I'm the Son of God, because he realized that he was a spirit and not a physical body, that he identified more with the spiritual body, which really came from God, you know, came from the source. And then the last thing he did was total immersion. He was totally became one with the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness on all planes and all dimensions throughout the multiverse. He did the complete merge with that consciousness. And people, you know, they don't understand that process. And that's the pattern that he laid down for all of us to do. And he made that very clear. He said, you will do greater things than I, for I go on to the Father, because he was leaving. But he prayed all the time, let them become one as I have become one, or we have become one. And that was his whole focus, is to assist people in making their own personal God connection and becoming one with God. You know, and that is the most blasphemous statement nowadays. You know, it's getting better. I mean, you can talk about it a little more, but, you know, that most of the churches want to be the go-between. They want to lay this heavy fear and guilt trip on you, and they want to be the go-between, and if you, you know, pay them enough money, you know, your sins are absolved, and you get that condo in heaven. So,
yeah, it's sort of like God needs a manager or agent, like a rock star or something, and oh no, you can't talk to him, you've got to deal with us, and we're jerks, and we're going to make sure you know that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really absurd, and the beauty of the near-death experience is that we are able to experience that unconditional love firsthand, and it's something that you come to know. It is no longer a hypothesis or a beautiful metaphor or, sadly, a watered-down cliché.
Yeah, the big cosmic joke is that God doesn't have an ego, and it can't even judge.
There you go.
And it's not male or female. It's so far beyond our puny little images that we project on it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, although there are gods, and, you know, the true, in the beginning, Michal Ledwith did some great work on this, and he said what the Genesis is really supposed to say after he got through with all his research. It says the Father of Fathers in the beginning created the gods, and the gods created the heaven and earth and, you know, all that, whatever. And so basically the source, whatever you want to call it, the void, everybody has a different name for it. Out of the void came this tremendous explosion of light, and the first creations were the light beings, these God beings that were at one with the source. And they learned how to use that same technique to, you know, create worlds and universes and solar systems. So that's really the correct interpretation.
And I think so, on one, too. It makes sense.
Yeah, and on one level, we have the ability to move up this vibrational continuum because we are multidimensional beings,
yes,
that exist on this vibrational continuum. And we can get beyond just being a body and a personality and move up this vibrational continuum and align with our blue body, which is our perfect incarnation, and that's going to start changing the DNA, everything on your physical body, and create the healing. And then you can move beyond that into Christ consciousness, the I Am, on up, and have these incredible healings. And again, it actually, everybody has different names for it, but it moves up the light spectrum. And you know, you have ultraviolet, you have the basically the Hertzian level, which is this physical world we're in right now. And then you have the infrared, which has all kinds of, anything goes there. You have all kinds of bizarre stuff, and that's where all the mythology about the, you know, devils and demons and all the other crazy stuff goes on there.
That's a lower frequency there. So
yeah,
that's really going to accommodate that kind of energy very well. Those reptilian kind of sinister, nasty, and lost entities too, for sure.
Exactly, and then you go, you know, you go above that, and you know, you get into the, you know, the ultraviolet. First you go into visible light, and that's another spectrum where there's all kinds of things going on there in the visible light spectrum. And then you get up into the ultraviolet, and that's where the polarities start ending. And you're moving more into that God consciousness, and you can keep going up where you just don't even identify with any polarity whatsoever. And that's what I experienced in my travels and out-of-body travels. One of them, I was meditating, this angelic being appeared to me, and I told him, I said, I want to see God. You know, I want to see what this is all about. And I took off, and I went with him, and I went through all these levels, and it was intense. And I had a bunch of women there that were in this group when I was going through this experience. And each time I went through a level, they went into, like, birthing pains. It was intense. It was bizarre watching them, but every time I went through a level, I felt this burn kind of energy, and then bam, I'd pop another level. But I ended up in this place where behind this place was the void. It was just the void. That's all there is. And then there was these columns of light, and one column had these, like, dark bubbles in it, and the other column had white orbs or bubbles in it, in these huge columns. And I asked, what is that? You know, and this angelic being came back to me, and it said that this is the first polarities. This is where the polarities first began of creation. And so I was watching this whole experience, and I saw all these other levels after that on down through the vibration continuum that were created after the first, you know, polarities. So I kept traveling out and experiencing a lot of these other levels, and when a lot of times when I went out of body and experienced all these other levels, I didn't go through the tunnel of light that people talk about. So I see there are different ways. I think it may depend on how high you go, what you experience, or it could also just be your belief system. And when you die, you're not really paying attention to the process. You're just you just end up there, and you don't really know how you got there. There might be a lot of reasons why people see things a little different. You know, I don't know exactly why, but I know you can actually go out of body and end up at a place without going through any tunnels, and you can also go through the tunnel.
Well, that's what happened with me during my near-death state, so that, you know, unlike a lot of people, I didn't go through a tunnel. I wasn't rising above and hovering over my physical body, basically. I could care less about that.
I really
just took off and went into the light.
Yeah.
And you know, when you were describing your experience, I thought, oh, Brian, that's just like what I went through. I just merged with that beautiful golden and almost had a pinkish golden white light, and you know it when you've merged with that light source, with that love. There's this, you know, it really is nothing short of unconditional love, and I feel like these words are so pitifully weak because it just can't describe it. But when you've been through it, you know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know it.
Yeah, I kind of think of ships, how some of these ships travel, because you'll see some ships that just cruise along, and, you know, they can go, you know, 750,000 miles an hour, and they're moving pretty fast, but they're still moving. You watch them cross the horizon. And then other ships don't do that. They just jump. They jump from one place to another. And,
yes, I know.
And I think
saying.
That's the way, when you get into the higher level, some people just jump. You know, they don't take the slow ship, you might say. They just they just jump from one place to the other.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about all of the different experiences, because I've been in dialogue with different people, and they'll say, well, you know, which NDE is right? And I'll say they're all right, because they're all experiencing different frequencies, different dimensions, and what have you.
Uh-huh.
What I really enjoyed was being turned on to Dr. Michael Newton and reading his book, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls, and he actually describes the different souls as being different colors. And as I was reading through what some of his subjects went through, and I say, yes, I saw that too whilst on the other side. It was very, very interesting. And so I really appreciated his work. I take it you're familiar with Dr. Michael Newton, are you?
Yes, I am. And, you know, in the Tibetan Foundation, we were taught that, you know, people operate off of different rays or colors, you might say.
Yes.
And each color has kind of a specific ability, but they're pretty rounded in all the abilities, but they just focus in that one area. And so if you have like a red color, those are the shakers. They're the ones that are going to make something happen and move things and get things going. A lot of orange and red energy.
Yes.
And, you know, and you get into the green energy and the blue, that's a lot of healing and wisdom energy. And the blue is just the love and wisdom energy in people's auras. And then you get up into the, you know, the beautiful pink and lavenders and those colors. Those are really high spiritual colors. And to me, the golden above that, you know, seems to be the last shot before the void, before you go into the more of the void. But and that's what I've seen these kids. I mean, I have a niece that has that golden energy around her. When you take a picture of her, all you see is this big gold ball on her head. You know, there's no head there. And she's beautiful and very powerful, you know, very powerful healer. Matter of fact, she took on the whole Baptist church here in the area and just embarrassed them, you know.
Ooh!
And so very, you know, very powerful girl. But, you know, I've seen over and over again that, you know, you can go down and get your aura photograph and you can look at a person's aura and you'll see where they're best at. You know, they're probably best in the healing art, or they're best in teaching and more of channeling the love and the wisdom through, or and some are just doers. They make it happen. You know, they're down here and they're the ones that really just bust through all the garbage and make it happen. So you can actually tell by people's aura photos what their nature is.
And the aura can also change every few weeks. It will shift in its colors and depth, as it were, and even the shape of it. So it's interesting to see how all that changes too. And then again, I think that even the orbs that people take on, you know, again, when they're out of their body, obviously, will also be different colors and even maybe different sizes. But I just, you know, felt such a serenity, a purity of essence, absolutely no fear whatsoever. In fact, even after I returned to my physical body, it did take time to reintegrate back into this plane, and it took a good while for the fear to start to creep in again, and I'm sorry that it did, and you know, we're all working on that, I guess, just a part of being on this plane.
Did you have trouble with matter, or defining where matter begins and energy?
Absolutely.
And things like that.
Yes.
And I was having a lot of those experiences, and
in fact, I still do.
yeah, where things that are physical, all of a sudden you see them as energy, and you're going, wait a second, you know, and then it's kind of a pretty weird experience when you start seeing that.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting point, James, because I've been through that all of my life. Now, an interesting note about this, too, is that my eyes are legally blind, and yet even when I was technically blind the first 2 years of my life, I did not experience blindness. I experienced such vivid and powerful visions, light-filled visions. But then when I started to gain some physical sight, but I only gained some, just enough to get by a little bit, I still had a really hard time telling where one left off and the other began, because I've always been interdimensional. And really, it was the NDEs as a grown-up that validated my experiences as a mystic and let me know, no, you're not crazy at all. This is really the way it is. Of course, I dealt with the ridicule and the opposition and the questioning and all of that stuff. And now, fortunately, you know, these things are coming out into the light of day and people can talk about them more openly, thank goodness. But it's even when I was having my near-death states, and that's what's so interesting, it was just so natural to me that I didn't think to ask, what's going on here? This seems a bit odd, because to me it wasn't odd.
Uh-huh.
It was totally natural. Then after coming back into this plane, I realized, oh, wow, I became more truly who I am, and now I'm in an alien place, in other words, this third-dimensional realm.
Uh-huh.
I do have trouble, as we were talking about earlier, I can't define time, and I do have a hard time with space as well. What am I seeing that's actually on another dimension, or what am I seeing that's 3D? So, yeah, that's something I reckon with basically on a daily basis.
I do a lot of that. You know, people ask me about an event, you know, that happened. I'll be telling them about this event that happened. I go, yeah, just the other day, this and this and this. And they go, you know, that was like 3 years ago. And I go, it was? I go, boy, it felt like it just happened like, you know, a couple months ago or something, or 6 months ago. And I think what happens is, you know, everything we've ever experienced is recorded in the soul as emotions, and that's how you access it. So whatever we had an incredibly emotional experience around seems to be kind of out of time, you might say. It's just right there, like it just happened when it may have happened, you know, a long time ago. And a lot of people are actually accessing, you know, wounds and traumas from past lives and
yes,
carrying those over into this life, and they don't even know why they're reacting, you know, with incredible fear. There's a good example is I had a couple come to me, and they went through the inner sensitivity training class that I was teaching, and they had they just bought this boat, and they just had this real strong desire. They wanted to sail and on the Columbia River there, and they bought this boat, and they were so excited about the boat. But whenever they got out of their car and started going up to the boat, the closer they got to the water, they just got into this big fight and never even got on the boat. They got into this big house and just said, forget it, just forget it. It's not going to, you know, I'm not going. And they got back in the car and left. And it happened again and again and again, and they couldn't figure out why. So they came to me, and it was during the class. It was like kind of in the middle of the class, and they said, hey, we're having this experience. And I said, well, let's check it out. And so we went into it, and I saw that they had three past lives where one murdered the other one twice in water, and the other one drowned the other one, you know.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah, and so they had three just terrible experiences in past lives around water, being together, you know, in water or around water where each one of them participated in the other's demise. So it was kind of, and then we cleared that up, and they went out, they got on the boat, and they went sailing off, and you know, one of those happily ever after stories. But people don't realize that some of these experiences they've had in the past can create some severe problems now, just as well as childhood trauma and, you know, and things of that nature. And And there's also, you know, you can hook into these discarnate spirits, too, that have a mental and emotional body and feel their energy and not be aware that it's not yours. And so you have all these weird feelings and emotions of dread or fear or anger or whatever. It may not even be your emotions. You're just picking it up.
That's a really good point, too. And a fortnight ago, I had a wonderful guest on my show, and we were talking about this very thing. Her name is Jenny Smedley. And she kept having all of these recurring nightmares, and funnily enough, the content was the same, and she was calling out to the same person in her nightmares, and she was horrifically depressed, even though she was very happily married and still mm-hmm. is. Well, it turned out that all of this came from a past life, and as a result of finally going through past life regressions, she was able to tap into completely what it was and get all of the details. Oh, it's tremendous. And she's got a book out about it and everything else. It's called Souls Don't Lie, or Souls Can't Lie. Mm-hmm. Souls Don't Lie. You know, this is such a valid information because people do carry stuff with them. And that's an important point you made, too, because I go through this. I'm so sensitive that
mm-hmm.
I'll pick up on something and I'll wonder, where the heck is this coming from? It doesn't feel like me. And then I have to realize, okay, there's somebody around me. And, you know, I'm one who discarnate as well as carnate people tend to gravitate towards who want some healing and help and support and that kind of thing. What do you do to help people to discern when this is coming from another source other than oneself, and what one can do about it?
You know, what we teach, I've written the two books, Reunion with Source and Becoming Gods, and it has the techniques for clearing these energies and keeping your fields clear. And we stress here that even before you meditate, you really need to learn how to clear any unseen negative influences because you're expanding in consciousness
Yes. And
taking in this greater territory, and not everything within that greater territory might be in your highest and best good. And so your meditations as well won't expand out if there's something there, if it feels unsafe. And so even your meditations won't really take you to the levels that you're trying to seek without learning these techniques. So we teach that first on, and how do we teach it? You know, in the intersensitive training classes, it's in the books as well. And, you know, we offer a counseling service here, too, that are our spiritual release sessions, the transpersonal release sessions, where we take people through any past lives, clear them, and then we go into their age one on up and clear the major blocks or patterns. And at the end, we initiate them into conscious contact with their main teacher and guide.
Do you use Reiki?
No, you know, I think that's just one, one name for the flow, you know, whatever
sure,
you want to call it.
Yes.
But I don't use Reiki. I've been trained in etheric healing and a lot of different techniques. But to me, I just find in the Native American tradition, they say you need to become like a hollow bone and just let the spirit work through you. And I see the more we label it or try to control it or make it happen, the less it happens. It's kind of interesting.
Oh, I certainly agree on that one. We just need to be a conduit for that flow.
Yeah, and we can give it any name we want, but basically it's just love energy that's flowing through it.
Well, why don't you repeat the name of your books again, and let's share with our listeners what your website is.
Okay, Reunion with Source is the first book, and we tell people that's the best one because it gives you a real strong foundation.
Reunion with Source, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it has stories like parables in the back, and it talks about the origin of the wrathful God and how that got created and how to burn that image and reunite. Covers a lot, just about everything. And then the second book takes you into interdimensional mind, everything from earth changes, you name it, and takes you all the way through that. And it's amazing when you read the second book, everything that was written in there back in 82 is happening right now. And we're going through that process, and that's becoming gods. And then the third book is The Ultimate Soul Journey, and that's more of an autobiography of all the different experiences that I've had.
Wow. Well, really look forward to seeing more of that. And what is your website for our listeners?
Oh, it's eseti.org, E-C, ETI.org.
Okay.
And they can also get the movie there, Contact Has Begun, which covers, you know, earth changes, near-death experiences, and the UFO phenomenon. But it goes into the more benevolent aspect of it, and the ones that are here to assist us in our awakening and healing process and our evolution now. We're going through a quantum leap in consciousness and energy or evolution. And, you know, the majority of the universe is benevolent. There's a really small contingent out there that might be malevolent or negative, and unfortunately that's the one that gets all the press and all
yes,
the...
Yes, yes.
You know, and as everybody's talking about, and they're missing the big picture, which is the more benevolent beings, and those are the ones that are really in charge of what's going on.
Well, see, that's what I think, too, and I'm so pleased that you've made this point, because... I don't know. It seems that there's something about fear, or anything fear-based. It's so aggressive and obnoxious and you know, it seems, quote-unquote, more powerful just because it is so aggressive and very much a bully. But it is indeed very, very much in the minority. And with all the UFO or FO, you know, experiences I've had, and then even seeing a lot of these videos online now, you know, I just see this activity going on, and I don't see or perceive or experience anything malevolent at all. They're just, you know.
I think I'm probably one of the most hated people in the UFO community, but one of the most loved by the people.
And is. You know, that's kind of interesting. That could bring me to another point that we might talk about here in a few minutes. But I wonder if it's because you are really committed to focusing on the benevolence, the love, the positivity, rather than the negative aspects of this. Because, I don't know, I really don't quite understand this, why people tend to thrive on horror and the stuff that is spooky. People seem to like horror stories and horror films and violent books and movies and all of that stuff. I just couldn't be less interested in something like that, and why would one want to focus on that sort of thing? So it's like if you're not focusing on the negative, and I guess people have got what I would say a false sense of power by focusing on this kind of thing.
Yeah, and it does keep, you know, unfortunately, you know, in the movie industry, fear and suspense sells.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, too, that, you know, there are certain disinformation people out there and things of that nature that really want to keep us fearful. And
yes,
they don't want us to connect with the benevolent beings or work on that level, because they're the go-betweens. You know, they're our protectors, and we pay them very big money to keep building more exotic weapons to kill people in more exotic ways and things like that. So they really want to keep this game going. And, you know, and you think about it, if I was an advanced ET and came here in the ship, the first thing they'd do is fire on us, you know, using some of these back-engineered weapons and try to knock the ship down and you know, steal the technology and back-engineer it for war toys and dissect the people on board, basically. And it's a very, very sick consciousness that we have going on here. But, you know, eventually that's going to fold in on itself, because I think the people are pretty tired of paying for all this nonsense.
I think you're right. Now, hold your thought, because I want to continue with this. It's the top of the hour, so I want to let everybody know you are listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and our special guest today is James Gilliland. And we're having a wonderful conversation about near-death experiences, interdimensionality, and UFOs. Another interesting thing that I've noticed, James, with all of this is that there is such a tremendous focus on this negativity, and I think that by keeping people locked in fear, once again, it is denying us two things. It's denying us our power, and it's denying us remembering who we really are.
Oh, I agree 100%, because one of the things that they're doing right now is that we could join, you know, the rest of the universe in peace and
oh boy, yes,
align with the benevolent ones And in the interest of national security, that's really what we should do, because, you know, going out and trying to shoot down beings that are several thousand years ahead of us in evolution and technology is a form of insanity, basically. And, you know, who knows, we might have a lesser evolved race that comes here that's not going to just take the high road and forgive and move on. And, you know, they may fire back, and it's going to make a real mess. So.
Well, I think you're right. You know, once again, we are dealing with a full spectrum of entities and awareness and planes of operation and what have you. And, you know, for example, I give the analogy, and a lot of us NDEers have given the analogy of radio and TV signals. And for example, some people are just operating on the AM band, and then other beings are operating on the UHF, the ultra-high frequency band, and they're two completely different frequencies,
mm-hmm.
and then the myriad of ones in between that. Just because you leave one doesn't mean, and move on to another frequency, it doesn't mean that the first one isn't still broadcasting or operating, but one
uh-huh.
changes frequencies when one leaves the body, or one, you know, one will travel into different dimensions. And, of course, I've spoken with friends and people that I've worked with about the UFOs, and it's kind of odd to call them unidentified because they seem very identified in more
yeah,
ways than not. But, you know, again, getting back to the subject of death and UFOs, it seems like these are subjects that people have, at least up to this point, have wanted to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Well, free energy, too. And any
big time.
Any kind of a cure that is natural and doesn't cost anything, you're just not going to hear about that on the air.
Oh, thank you so much for bringing that up, too, because that's been something so paramount on my mind lately, this thing of free energy. Oh, and when you were talking about, just a few minutes ago, before we did the station ID, about, you know, people shooting a ship and then, you know, stealing its technology and what have you, I was reminded of Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what happened to him.
Yeah.
He had developed a way of harnessing free energy that he wanted the whole of the masses to have access to.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was stolen, and he was murdered, and we still got no free energy available to us. And I just think it's ludicrous that, you know, so much of what is really absurd and negative is all centered around money.
Yeah, they've had this kind of technology, I think, since the 30s. And they've been back engineering things and definitely had it, you know, after Roswell. Everybody knows about that event. But Philip Kostol wrote a book about that, and he said that we've been back engineering the technology for quite some time, and basically said the microwave, fiber optics, and actually the computer chip all came from back engineering alien technology.
That's what I thought, too.
But, you know, what we have back engineered, the common person isn't seeing, because we have biological computers, and we have things that would just blow people's mind. We have not just anti-gravity, we have counter-gravity, you know, which doesn't just float things, it shoots things off several thousand miles an hour. But we can produce all of our energy needs and transportation needs, everything, fuellessly, and we've been able to do that for some time right now. You know, but the people are just either complacent and don't want to push to bring this forward, or they're just allowing themselves to be, you know, totally manipulated by these brute squads, you know, which are the oil companies.
Yes.
And they keep taking people out right and left, like Tesla and all these other people. They just took out Stanley Meyer, who developed an engine that ran on water. It split water into hydrogen and oxygen and burned
That's
it.
That's right.
Yeah, right on the. It happened right on the unit. You didn't have to have storage tanks or anything. And so they snuffed him out. And now I believe his brother's name is James, and he's carrying on with it. So hopefully we need to say a lot of prayers with James that he can get this technology out. But
for goodness sakes, now when was this lad snuffed out? I admit I wasn't aware.
Not too long ago. It was, I don't know the exact date, but I think it was within a year or so.
Okay.
But
yeah, because I was not aware that he was gone. But you know what? these people are not going to be able to sniff the light, because that's what I have been seeing, and I'm so grateful for this, is that as insidious and sinister as these forces are, there's always another pocket of light that's going to emerge, sort of like water boiling, and it goes, boom, here we are. You know, you can't sniff the light. And I think that that's why the message of the NDE is so important, because just in the past number of years, so many of us have come forward. And I admit, I was in the closet, as it were, for 20-odd years, and I only came out not even 10 years ago, believe it or not. And now there's, you know, no turning back now.
Yeah. Well, you know, the movie, I think it was called Suriana, they had a scene in there that a lot of people missed, and it showed them actually taking people out, assassinating people and everything to keep these oil contracts going, you know, with America and not going to China and things like that. You know, all these events going on and all the manipulations going on by our alphabet agencies and everything. And one of the guys said that, he goes, well, how long can this go on? How long can we keep doing this? And he said something like, you know, basically until they find out they can run their cars on water.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
So, and most people miss that. I don't know the exact terms of it, but I'm almost thinking about getting that movie again and watching it to see exactly. But the guy did say that. He goes, well, you know, until they figure out they can run their cars on water. So that technology has been around for a long, long time. It's just withheld. And you know, they had all of these electric cars that ran really well. Everybody just loved their cars, and you plug them in and they charge them up, and they took them all off the market, and they just scrapped them, put them all in a big lot and just scrapped them. And the problem, and there was no reason for that, because you couldn't buy them. They're all recalled. The ones that people bought were recalled, and it was a lease, and it was a real mess. So, you know, basically, you know, they had to turn them in after a year, 2 years or something like that, and they just scrapped them. Well, the thing is that these cars, although they ran on charging them up, it would be really easy to put one of these devices on it and run the car forever. You know, it wouldn't need, it would keep it charged in one of these zero-point devices. And I've seen these devices. They do exist. I've actually held them in my hand. I've watched them operate. And, you know, a device smaller than a small little pie dish, you know, that you put your piece of pie on, could run, you know, four or five houses and whatever car, you know, and your automobile too. But, you know, this is out there, the technology is out there, and it's just, you know, it's up to the people to wake up and you know, make a stand and get rid of all these politicians that have taken all the money, you know, from these major corporations that are basically holding everybody enslaved through dependency.
Exactly, exactly. That's exactly what's going on. And, you know, it's so interesting being aware of all of this technology. And then I think of the kind of simple-minded person who's so daft to believe that when the body dies, that's it, and also the person believes that the only place where there's intelligent life is this planet. And I think, how myopic is that, to have that kind of thought? When life is just so rich and full, and again, when we go through our near-death episodes, we experience that firsthand, how tremendously grand and expansive life is. And it is truly everywhere, and the love, again, that envelops us. And when there is that perfect balance and that deep knowing, there is no fear. There's a total understanding that everything is evolving exactly as it should.
Yeah, they have a really small God.
You know? Yes, they do.
if you look at this, just our little Milky Way galaxy, and I think they have something like 200 billion suns in it, with planets revolving around them and solar systems, and then, you know, they're up to 500 billion galaxies and more. You know, the more they build bigger telescopes, the more they see it's actually infinite. So now you've got 200 billion suns with planets revolving around them times 500 billion, and then you take, and that's just this third dimension, and then you add 11 more dimensions to that, which they now know exist. You know, the universe is so vast to think that there's this one little tiny you know, God with a beard that created Earth, and that's it.
Yes.
I can't even wrap my mind around that when you see how vast the universe is and how people could actually think that we're it and this one little tiny planet is the only one that has life. And if you read all the ancient texts, none of them say that. Even the Bible talks about it. You know, they talk about the sweet energies of the Pleiades and Orion and, you know, and Amos and Job and the many mansions of God. And if you get into the old Vedic texts and things like that, they say there's over 480,000 humanoid species in the universe that they've identified. So, you know, you think about that and you look at the writings about their craft and the different types of craft, and some craft are physical, some are more energy, some are magnetized light ships, and some are just pure consciousness. So the universe is so full of life out there. It's just amazing that I can't even comprehend us being the only life form, advanced life, human life form out there. It just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
And not very advanced, at least not not right now in its behavior. It seems like
I tell people, I said, if this is God's best, this is a very sorry universe.
Yeah. <You know? laughs>
If this is the best that God can do, then we need a bigger God. You know?
Oh gosh, yeah, and you know, I'm still feeling hopeful though, and I've noticed, perhaps you have too, that within, I noticed it tremendously last year, that it seemed that there's a lot more dialogue circulating about this kind of stuff. Quite an awakening going on all mm-hmm. over the place now. So that's got me inspired, and I think that as we keep doing this work and we keep having very positive and compassionate thoughts, even towards these sinister types, they need love and compassion. They don't mm-hmm. need us to behave like they are.
No.
That's what's going to turn all of this stuff around, and I do maintain that if we didn't have, you know, the real hope and the likelihood of indeed turning this all around and turning it into a place of harmony and balance and love, then we wouldn't have been sent back. Now, you had a choice during your near-death episode.
Mm-hmm.
I did not. I was told that I had to come back to this plane, but of course reminded that it wasn't home and that I wasn't to identify with it, but just to traverse through it, do the work, and then I could come home again.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, there's no heartbreak greater than that. No romantic heartbreak could even come anywhere near close to that kind of heartbreak of being told that I had to leave that place of complete unconditional love. And
it's really hard to match that.
Goodness me.
You know, a lot of times with me, people ask me about that. You know, how do you deal with these devastating relationships or romances or whatever? And I said, well, you know, I said, I kind of cheat. What I do is that if it's not happening here in the physical, I turn my energies up towards, you know, Mary or one of the divine feminine energies. And I get this incredible bliss and love and divine nurturing energy come in, and there's no comparison. And I said that the problem is that we hook into other people and we have all these attachments to people, places, and things. And we attach our joy, our love, our acceptance and approval, everything to this outer world. And it's all found from within.
Absolutely.
And as long as we keep trying to get it on the outer level, we're just setting ourselves up again and again and again for disappointment. But if we can turn our energies upward and make our own personal God connection, you know, you can get fed incredible energies, either masculine or feminine energies, from these extremely advanced beings that have the ability to totally love us unconditionally. And you know, with that energy, if things aren't happening, you know, in the physical, it's time to take a break. And
there you go.
Get out in nature a little bit and make your personal God connection. And you'll find out when you come back, you'll be sitting, you know, in a position of strength again, and you're not going to be dealing with some of these things, and it's a lot about just self-love and loving yourself enough, you know, to remove yourself out of these situations or not participate in them.
Well, you've made some good points here, and one thing that I would like to address too is that that you can have these, what is being called spiritually transformative experiences, STEs, you know, without being anywhere near death, but you just pop into these higher realms and once again experience that being in the one, and it's really an experience of knowing that all is one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just that feeling of being so grand, so big, and it's got nothing to do with ego, but again, there's just no sense of being separate anymore. You're in that love, it is everywhere, and all life is a part of you and you it. And there's a tremendous peace that comes with that. And I also noticed during these states, whether it was my near-death or spiritually transformative states, is that there's no longer any feeling of attachment. I was able to be totally detached, but totally in love simultaneously.
Yeah, it's quite an experience. You can't really explain that one to other people.
Yeah, I can see that some people are nodding their heads and going, "What has that happened?" And but boy, when it happens, you know it.
Oh yeah, I had an experience. I was very much in love with this one woman, and just the connection was intense, and it was very intense, and she had a major lapse of integrity and decided to, you know, excuse me, run off with this trust funder, you know. Basically, his dad was with one of the major oil companies, believe it or not.
Oh, dear.
But
oh, no.
They were indicted for killing, you know, Indians over there in Alaska and some of the other things. But, you know, I told her, I said, you know, I said, basically, you're a show pony, and that's all you're wanted for, and there's no real soul connection, no higher, you know, connection there, and if that's what you want to do. And in the end, it was interesting. I actually put flowers all across the bed, you know, and I just said, I love you. Whatever you want to do, do it, you know, but I can't continue in this chaos and this confusion. You need to make a decision. And so she ran off, you know, she decided to run off and everything. And I was talking to this girl, and she was 14 years old. Her mother was there, and we were sitting there just talking on a hill in this beautiful, really beautiful setting. And all of a sudden I see this girl, her head goes back, and she starts nodding, and she goes back like she's fallen asleep almost and comes back, and she turns around and she looks at me, and she goes, James, she said, you have to keep loving no matter how hard it hurts. You have to keep loving. She said, that's the only way through, the only way out of this. And I realized later on it was like ISIS coming through this 14-year-old woman.
Wow.
To deliver this message, and it had such an impact. And I realized that I had to forgive, I had to keep loving, I had to let go of this, and you know, I needed to move on and get on with my life. And it was just a major healing, and I realized that there's nothing worth losing your joy or your happiness or staying and being love, not trying to get love or acceptance and approval outside yourself, just being that. That there's nothing worth taking you out of that center, and that is our natural state.
Yes, it is.
Exactly, and we think, you know, we're so programmed in this life to seek, you know, everything outside of ourselves.
Yes.
Like, we'll be happy if we have the big new car, you know, the big new house, and then everybody will look up to us, and we'll be accepted and approved of, and all this thing, this whole program that we've been given here is a false program, and until we break out of that and realize that's really not what it's all about. And you know, we were talking about these negative guys, whatever you want to call them, these tyrants or just wounded little boys trying
yes,
to find ways of getting love and acceptance and approval outside of themselves and regaining their power. And they think that power is actually the ability to control and overpower others, which is really a very low form of power. It's not power at all.
Well, it's an extremely false sense of power, because that isn't really what constitutes power in the first place.
Yeah, all that does is support your lower self, your ego, and it doesn't have anything to do with your higher self, where the real love and the real power is. And so they're seeking love and joy and happiness and power through the lower self. And in doing all of these acts, they're actually condemning themselves to more and more lives, you know, of these lesser experiences with less power, less you know, and a whole boatload of karma, you know, to go along with it. So they're really shooting themselves in the foot again and again and again in the eternal scheme of things, and they're not gaining anything. And when you talk to these people, you know, they may be filthy rich and they've got, you know, the new Mercedes and all the other stuff going on, but they're extremely empty and unhappy, and their whole focus is just basically on dominating and controlling and taking, and there's they are going to have to come to terms with this on one degree or another. There's different degrees of this going on, but eventually everybody's going to have to come to terms with that everything you've done to others, you know, that created any harm or suppression or controlled or dominated or took away their freedom or whatever, created any loss or pain or suffering to others, always comes back to self, and you can't get into the higher planes until you've experienced that and gone through that. So they're actually just heaping all of this negative karma on this big pile that's just actually suppressing them and holding them down lower and lower and lower. And eventually they'll figure it out and they'll have the big, you know, aha, the big awakening. But, you know, it's not going to be a pretty picture when they have their light review and they get to go over everything they've done to others. And what I see is that basically, my greatest joy is seeing people expand, open up to their higher selves, heal and release the old wounds and traumas and release the past and start moving forward in their evolution. That's what brings me the greatest joy. And I think just having the gifts to do that is the real wealth, and the understanding of, you know, my own personal God connection and who people really are, and being able to transfer that to others is the highest wealth of all.
Things that are very important, and there's nothing that brings me more joy either than to see this unfoldment in others, or to find out that someone experienced a healing or a spurt of joy or an awakening of some sort. And just some of the sweet emails that I get brings me the greatest joy. I mean, it just absolutely makes me day to see this. So that's what inspires me in this work, and I dare say 90% of the work that I do is strictly a labor of love, but I'm so passionate about it because I do so strongly believe in the power of that light and love, because I have experienced it. And even when I came into this plane originally, I knew that I came from another place where this love and this harmony and this balance do exist, that it is a natural state. And what's being imposed or played out on this plane is very much an unnatural state.
Oh, definitely. I think it's you know, one guy said something. I don't want to give a lot of power to the negative, but this one guy was talking about, and he says, you know, they're actually, he says, I really don't believe in good and evil and all this other stuff and the devil. He said, but there seems to be this force that has a definite plan, and its plan is just to create as much havoc as possible on this planet and keep people separate, divided, and down and trapped. And he says there does seem to be some kind of a force and involved in that. And I was thinking about that too when he was talking about it, and I said, you know, it's hard to deny that when you look at what's going on. My vision of it is that, you know, there's the Christ consciousness, which is total service oriented, and you can't outgive God. You know, it's just incredible, and it's tapped into that pure unconditional love and joy and bliss, and it knows it's one with all creation, and it sees the Creator in all creation. And then you have this other consciousness that sees itself as separate, and it's that me consciousness, and all it can do is compete and you know, destroy and just, you know, hoard as much as possible. It doesn't have any kind of cooperative consciousness to it, and there's different degrees of that. But I always see the struggle between the Christ and the Antichrist is something within each individual, between their higher nature and their lower nature. And there are people totally expressing from their lower nature, and they think they're very clever in doing so, but, you know, there's no real wisdom in that, because there's always action, reaction, or karma, whatever you want to call it. And despite how clever they are, you know, wherever they go, there they are, and their karma's right there behind them. So So in the days to come, basically, even Jesus said that. He said, no rock should be left unturned, and all the iniquities will be shouted from the rooftops. And that's this grand awakening where everybody, you know, gets tapped into their own intuition. They have direct knowing, and they can sense when somebody's lying, or you can just feel the frequencies of somebody and their true nature.
And thank goodness for that, too. And I do, you know, I notice this, too, that, you know, with all of these changes going about, when I think of the ones, again, operating on these lower frequencies, it's really because they've been amnesic, you know, they've forgotten who they really, really are. And so when you're not operating in a space of total consciousness and awareness, then you are acting out of that ignorance. And ignorance can do some pretty strange things.
Exactly. And what they told me, too, is that in the days to come, they said the best way to look at it is there's a great amplifier coming. And it's going to amplify everything. It doesn't judge. It's just going to raise up the frequencies and amplify everything. And every action has a reaction, so it's going to amplify that. So karma is going to be intensified, and it's going to be happening quicker and quicker and faster. And at the same time, too, that path is self-consuming. You know, all the prophecies talk about the two paths, and one path is going to totally focus in, you know, destruction of the environment, competition, greed, selfishness, and that program, and that is self-consuming. And it actually is the downward spiral of evolution until it totally consumes itself and it's gone.
And it burns itself out, basically.
Yeah, and the upward spiral is focusing on, you know, universal peace and brother-sister love and cooperating and working in harmony with each other and the planet, and, you know, seeing the Creator in all creation. And those people are going to continue to evolve and expand in consciousness and move on. And so a lot of these people, whatever you want to call them, the tyrants, the dark hearts, you know, some of these Illuminati people and things like that, they're on that downward spiral, and it's a self-consuming path, and their only way out basically is to do a complete 180 and shift all of their energy and all of their consciousness into the awakening healing process and their assets and work towards turning this planet around, because either their karma, you know, it's either going to come through nature or it's going to come through the collective consciousness that is awakening very quickly. One way or the other, that their fate is pretty much sealed unless they take this, you know, go through this major shift.
Well, one thing that is being pointed out, too, is that they cannot fathom the power of love in the human spirit.
Uh-huh.
They're locked. It's like they've been so fragmented, and they can't see even, you know, the truth of their own essence, which is, you know, everything originally stems from the divine source, the light.
Uh-huh.
And it's only perception that there is separateness from it. And I've been thinking about them a lot. Well, I do, because I'm aware of, you know, I do a lot of research like yourself. I do a lot of healing work and this sort of thing. And I've really been focusing so much on regarding these dark ones, these shadow people, whatever, with compassion.
Uh-huh.
Not to regard them, from the stance of anger or you buggers, you know, that sort of thing.
You end up becoming them. You know.
Exactly. And so it's really imperative that, as despicable as their behavior is, as their agendas are, we have got to regard them and keep projecting love towards them, because that is what is going to dissolve this darkness, not by being angry with them or even trying to counter them. And I remember even reading in the I Ching, the Book of Changes, I can't remember what hexagram it was, but it was about, you know, when there is conflict and trouble, it's about focusing on putting energy towards doing something good, positive, being creative, rather than countering or again, opposing or being combative. And I think that's a really important point, that when there's something that is amiss, that we need to focus on doing something creative and positive and loving that is going to heal, rather than contribute to the destructive process. Now, I'd like to ask you what some of your ideas or suggestions would be to our listeners, because I know people are troubled by all of this stuff. Let's face it, there's that really encroaching darkness taking place. What do you suggest that some of the things that people can do to help rise above the fear and the anger and even the perception of being separate? Because, mm-hmm. of course, we're not.
Well, to me, I love this one saying. They say one on the side of God is the majority.
Oh, yes, yes.
And whenever I hear that, I just get a big chill, you know, And there is this force, whatever you want to call it. Even when I talk to the ultra-dimensional beings, they said, you know, there is a God. It's more of a frequency and a force. And
there you
it's
go.
Pressing hard on the earth right now. And all of the other dimensions and these higher beings are all pressing very hard on the earth right now, and they're altering the grid and the consciousness here on the earth and helping us to release the past and even release the energy out of the earth, which is all this psychometrized war and destruction and this toxic thing that we've been doing here. So there's a huge shift going on. I kind of see it as it's going to happen on many levels, you know, that's coming in, and we need to support the highest consciousness energy, which is this pure unconditional love and joy and bliss. And I also support the people that are in the trenches, you know, that are identifying the problem, saying, look, this is what's going on. This has to stop. But the main thing is that there's a difference between standing in your power and standing in judgment or fear.
There you go.
And a good example was there was a place here, and they were having total conflict over cleaning up this mess. And it's one of the nuclear dump sites.
Are you talking about where you live in that area?
Yeah.
Was it Oregon or Washington?
Hanford, yeah, it was in Hanford. And what happened was, when I tell people, I said, you know, if you're going to a peace rally and you're marching for peace, are you at peace? And, you know, are you contributing to the againstness and the war? Or are you standing firm and, you know, I want peace, period? Or are you in judgment and anger and fear, and if we don't have peace, this is, you know, what kind of energy are you adding to the program here? And there's nothing wrong with coming, you know, allowing your own God self to come through you or your higher spirit, whatever you want to call it, and speak and say what needs to be said and standing in that truth. But if you're operating out of the ego and fear and all the other stuff, then you're just adding more chaos or more fuel to the fire. So there was a group there, and I was talking to them about that, and a couple of the people, I initiated them into contact with the highest beings, you know, their own main teacher and guides. And I said, next meeting you go to, I really want you to invoke this energy. And before you even go to the meeting and while you're in the meeting, keep bringing this energy in and allow it to speak through you and guide you as to what to say. And, I mean, they had incredible arguments and battles, and nobody was getting anywhere. And so they did that, and this one woman did it, and she invoked this energy. I work with Kazekiel's energy. And all of a sudden, everything just shifted in the room. And she said, do you have a family? And he said, yes. He goes, I have, you know, two daughters or whatever. And so you have the scientists, you know, that are being paid a whole lot of money to try to clean up this mess, and a lot of them are the same guys under contract that made the mess, you know, and they're getting paid on both sides. And so she said, "Do you have a family?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Do you love your daughter?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Do you really want your daughter to be drinking this water, and to be swimming in this water? And what do you think the consequences are going to be?" And it just stopped, you know, it just stopped for a second, and brought everything back to basics again. And, you know, got off all the money and the fighting and all the other stuff and the lawsuits and, you know, brought the real thing about, okay, what's this going to do to the next generations, and how can we clean this up versus, you know, continue to argue over whose fault it is and who's going to do what and everything else. And it brought everything back into perspective. And then she saw these guys just break down. One after another, they started breaking down, and they started just, like, losing their hard shell, you might say, and all of a sudden, things started changing and started moving in the right direction. But, you know, I see over and over again, and I've seen people organize these peace marches, and they're just screaming, and, you know, they're, you know, hate this, hate that, and everything else, and just actually going into a frenzy about it. And I just said, oh, my God, you know, first of all, nobody's even going to listen to you. They don't want to hear that, you know. And so you're not really being heard, for one thing. And then also, too, you're just projecting all of this fear and all of this other stuff, you know, into the program. And you know, you're adding more hate and more anger and more separation into what you're trying to heal.
That is such a wonderful point, because I've been in dialogues about this very thing with people, too. So you don't really need to go to a demonstration and shout and carry on, because it's really not going to accomplish anything except getting your name marked on some kind of database, you know? And I know a number of years ago, and I wasn't one to participate in protests either, and the only time I did, or the only thing that I did whilst at anything like that was, I'm a musician, so I sang and I played music.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I was really trying to project something positive, a solution, and being loving, as opposed to, you know, again, the opposition thing that we were talking about earlier. We need to raise the frequency and offer a loving resolution.
And you know, they did a thing a long time ago. I think it was in the 60s. And this woman organized, and I can't remember what it was about. I just heard the story secondhand. But I guess she did this thing called Hands Around the White House. And so all of these people held hands, and they surrounded the White House. And they started singing and prayers and things like that, and it just had a huge impact, you know, on what's going on. And you know, I think this huge awakening process that we're undergoing, not to judge any level of it, but I think some people are there to really shake things up and get the information out, and other people are there to, you know, for different reasons. But, you know, like Alex Jones, I actually get a kick out of him. You know, I go, you go, you know, and he's, you know, here's a guy standing in his power. You know, he's standing up for what he believes is right. You know, he's passionate about it. You know, they call him the bulldog. He just goes after it and says it like it is. And he's kind of holding that energy that people need to find within themselves. You know, and I get a kick out of it. I watch him and do his thing. You know, it's not really my thing, but I think there's kind of like this endearing humor about it on the higher levels.
Sure. Yes, I know what you're saying.
And when the higher beings are watching this thing, you know, I can feel this real endearing, like go for it, you know, give the people an example of standing in your power and saying what needs to be said, you know, but, you know, there might be different ways of doing that.
Sure, I find him a little bit aggressive myself, and he's still stuck in a lot of the, you know, religious and patriotic, you know, belief systems and stuff, but that's where he's at, and all right, so be it. But but the only thing that I find myself being concerned about with regards to someone like that is that he's still, according to my observation, I'll just put it that way, is there's still a lot of fear going on there, and still being stuck in his, as I said, his patriotism and his religion and all of that stuff. And I can certainly respect people where they're at, but I still don't see that as being particularly enlightened. He's still doing a service, and that's good, but then I've seen other people who don't even have to be, you know, shaking a fist and squinting their eyes and barking at you. You know,
it's kind of like, I don't know how to explain it. I'm kind of almost neutral about it, but
sure,
there's a part of me that finds it, you know, I can't really explain it. I think he's like a catalyst.
Yes.
He's like an actor in a play.
Yes.
And he's actually catalyzing all this stuff to come up, and so people can look at it and deal with it or move through it or whatever. And, you know, in a way, he's like a catalyst for change, which we really need.
Sure, and I probably see things as you do, too, regarding him as, okay, he can reach a certain genre of people who need to be, who can only be reached in that
mm-hmm.
particular manner or what have you. So I certainly appreciate what he's doing, even though my approach is entirely different than his. But yes, and you know, even like, for example, when I read the material from Neil Donald Walsh, you know, and some of it would just really bug me, and I thought, but he's really reaching the American masses, and he's reaching a certain group of people that he would be most qualified to reach, and so I had to really appreciate that, even though there were a lot of things that he was saying that I found a bit frustrating.
Yeah, I know what you're. I know exactly what you're saying. You know, I tried to meet with a lot of the people there in Ashland. There's several people. I don't want to mention a bunch of names, but it's weird. They avoid me like the plague. And
I've been through that, too, even with the organization that I belong to, the International Association for Near-Death Studies. There's just some people who won't even touch me for whatever reason.
yeah.
C'est la vie, you know.
Yeah.
I still regard them with love, even though I don't necessarily understand or agree with their stance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when we've been sent to do this work, we are always led, and every single day and even every moment I'm saying, correct me where I'm mistaken. I'm not, you know, I'm not opposed to being corrected if
yeah.
I'm mistaken about something, and I'm always open to finding out something new. And so even in spite of my age having white hair, you know, I'm not setting me ways as stuck. I'm very happy to be corrected if I need to learn. Well, I'm always going to be learning, for goodness sakes, but if I need to be corrected about something, sure, show it to me, and I'm happy to stand corrected.
That's the first thing I do in my classes. I tell people right up front, I just said, look, I'm going to make this really clear up front. I said, I'm not your guru, you are. You know?
There you go.
And all I'm here is to show you techniques and ways to tap into your own inner guidance and make your own personal God connection. And the second thing I want you to know is I'm not infallible. And I have my program and my unique purpose for being here. And if you follow me, you're lost, because each one has their own soul purpose for being here, their own unique purpose. And there's some shared things that we'll be working in together. But, you know, I just make it up front. If you get that look in your eye and start going into that worship mode or that guru thing, I'm going to do something really embarrassing.
Good for you.
Yeah, to snap you out of it. But I see that's one of the last tests that people go through, is they have this experience, they get all this information, they have this awakening or whatever, and then they try to gather a lot of people around to validate that experience. That's basically how religions are born. You know, somebody
yeah.
has an incredible mystical experience, and then they gather a big group around it to validate it, and then presto, you have a religion. But the last stage is to is they kind of shift into that see me, dig me, I'm so spiritual program, you know?
Yes.
And that group there, I mean, they don't have a lot of time for me, you might say.
and they lose the point very quickly, don't they, by doing that? Because, it's not about me or someone or something that's separate. It's about all of us together.
Exactly, and the humility seems to be lost. But it's one of the last challenges you go through is that program of, like one of the masters said, he said, you know, you don't swell with pride when they're flattering you, and you don't shrink with fear when they're condemning you. You just stay, you know, connected and let them do what they need to do. But, you know, I've seen over and over again that, you know, I've been running into that a lot, and I was on a major speaking circuit for a while, and I'm kind of getting off that circuit, and I'm going to start teaching people that are just really sincere and going forward now, because it's, you know, the competition there, especially even in the UFO community, the competition, they eat their young, you know.
Yes.
It's unbelievable, and you know, if you don't support that victim role, that, you know, they've all been, you know, abducted and tortured, and the black ops are out there, you know, manipulating everybody and mind control, and, you know, which is going on. But if you don't support that fully as that's it, and there's nothing else happening, boy, they come at you with a vengeance. It's amazing.
And there again, it's just, it's. scared how people just want to default into the negative and something
insidious
all the time instead of the positive aspects. And you know, I don't have a television, and I've seen very, very few movies or films. I don't even remember when was the last time I was at a cinema. But I do remember seeing a film called Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind. Third Kind. See, I can't do numbers either. Help. Anyway, I really appreciated how that was focusing more on the positive aspects of that. You know, the timelessness, you know, and again, how everything is connected. But I've just always gravitated toward the positive aspects of these, and you know, I actually feel like I'm one of them. I've never related to being on this plane. Anyway, and so, you know, when I see this dialogue going on, I think it's exciting, and I also think, well, it's about time, because, again, the fact that we really are multidimensional and residing in a multiverse, and I really appreciate that you mentioned that yourself, because that is really the truth of it. And I also make it a point when I'm sharing things with people that this is, I'm just speaking from my experience and my observations, and I'm not trying to be dogmatic about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You can do whatever you want with the information once you walk away from here. In fact, I'm going to be giving a wee talk tomorrow to a group of people here in northern Vermont, so it'll be interesting to talk with them about near-death experiences and
mm-hmm.
the fact that we live forever. Now, we've got just a wee little bit of time. Do you have anything coming up that you would like to share with our listeners, any events coming up, or even sharing with us maybe a corner that you're turning and something else that you're getting into at this point?
Yeah, I actually do. I've got quite a few things going on right now. We have the WESAC Festival coming up May 16th, and you can either go to eseti.org website, or here at BBS, if you go to the As You Wish website.
Okay.
It's on there. That's coming up. And then there's a meditation group that's going to meet there up on the mountain on Friday. If people want more information, they can email me, you know, through the website, and I can give them information on that.
And which mountain is this, lad?
It's up on Mount Shasta.
Mount Shasta, okay.
Yeah, it's a real high-energy place. And
yes.
A lot of activity there, a lot of things going on. The talking a little bit about... I wanted to go into two things. Well, let me go through the... We also have the major 4th of July conference here. It's called the Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference, where we have top-notch speakers. We have Michal Ledwith. William Henry is coming up. Myself. Alfred,
I knew him in Nashville.
Yeah, Alfred Webre is going to be there, or Weber. It sounds like Webre the way it's written, but it's actually Weber.
It's Weber, yes.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, he's great. And then Laura Lysak is going to be there. It's a real diverse group. It covers everything from the top science to UFOs to spirituality. But we have a really good group there. We're premiering two movies there, two Orbs movies, Michal's movie, and then Orbs, The Veil is Lifting. With Hope and Randy Mead are going to be there as well. But that's coming up July 4th, and they can get all that information on the website as well. One thing we were talking about earlier I wanted to touch on, I'm seeing over and over that people are really going to need to focus on making their own personal God connection and developing their own inner sensitivity.
Yes.
And in the days to come, because there are so many teachers that are coming out right now, and they're pulling all the energy in and you know, it's sad because they aren't empowering the people and teaching the people to, you know, make their own connection, get their own advice and their own, you know, inner sensitivity training going. And in the days to come, it's so important that we do develop our own inner sensitivity, and so we can sense in the moment to go left or go right or what we need to do.
Absolutely.
If you're going to give your power away to some leader and he's actually taking your power, he's probably not clear enough to hear the message clearly, so he's probably going to lead you off a cliff. You know,
yes,
so.
Because I think you're absolutely right about this, and that anyone who's really in the love and the light is not going to require your power.
Exactly.
And this is such a powerful and pointed statement you're making, because we also need to let people know that it is entirely possible to make that connection with Source by going within.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a middleman. You don't need an agent or manager. Light Source doesn't have an agent or manager, thank you very much. You know?
Yeah.
And this is great. You know, metaphorically, it's interesting. It's interesting to think about having been in the music business. And since I wouldn't do the sex and the drugs, then I was ousted. And I thought, well, how beautiful that things have evolved, that now people can just create their own studios and burn their own CDs. Thank you very much. They don't need a middleman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the same thing is also true, which has actually always been true, is that we have always had that connection with Source, that we don't need to go through anyone else. And you're so right, just really turning within. And, you know, maybe to be fair, it's a little easier for us indie ears to say this, because we've had these direct experiences where we know in no uncertain terms that this is possible, and we've been there and done it. But again, people who've never had a near-death experience can have these powerful connections, just doing something that brings them joy.
Uh-huh.
They can suddenly go into a transcendent experience.
And yeah, any kind of repetition, you know. I was meditating one day and I asked Babaji, what's the most powerful teaching I can bring here to the ranch to help people bust through? And he said, put a shovel in their hands.
There you go.
And I thought about that, and he said, you're in a vortex. He said, we're here. The access is very easy here, and all you have to do is give their mind something to do, you know, something repetitious, and we can start teaching them from within. But I'm seeing over and over again that to me, I think the most powerful thing is to, you know, learn some tools and techniques for clearing the unseen negative energies and meditation techniques. But there's no, McDonald's drive-in manifestation things for avatars. It just doesn't work that way. You've got to do your time. You know,
there's people
that'll help you, but you really got to do your time and do it out in nature. Find a clear space and do your meditation time and develop your own personal God connection. That's the only thing I can say.
That's wonderful, and you're absolutely spot on about this. I want to thank you so much, James, for being with us. This has been a wonderful 2 hours. And why don't you share with our listening audience once again the titles of your books and the DVD that is coming out and your website once again.
Yeah, the movie is Contact Has Begun, and that's on the website eseti.org. And the books are The Ultimate Soul Journey is the recent book I just finished. And, you know, I just, I'm almost out. It's amazing. I just printed them and they just flew out the door. So I'm in the second printing of that already, and it's just a brand new book.
Excellent.
But the other two books are Reunion with Source and Becoming Gods, and there's information that was brought in 1982, and it's so relevant to these times. It just blows people's minds when they read the books, and they were way ahead of their time when they came out, but they definitely relate to all the experiences we're going through right now.
Well, this is wonderful. I'm so pleased to have had you on Toward the Light. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale. And we've been talking with James Gilliland, and his website is eceti.org. This has been a wonderful dialogue, and I'm here to remind you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Next week on Toward the Light, we are going to have back as a special guest Dr. Claude Swanson. He's a brilliant physicist who actually links metaphysics and science together. So you're going to want to tune in next week to another transmission of Toward the Light. Please remember that only love prevails. Let that be your meditation for the rest of the day. Thank you again, James, for being with us. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale signing out for this week, this transmission of Toward the Light, leading back to the source. We will talk to you next week. Love and light to all.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone. and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.